No foreign policy area was more difficult and more controversial for President Clinton than the relationship with China. His China policy was characterized by wild swings in emphasis, confrontation, and suspicion. The Clinton presidency was a period of enormous complexity in American relations with China, yet it ends on many positive notes. In part four of a week-long series on President Clinton's foreign policy legacy, NPR's Mike Schuster reports.
It was hard during the Clinton years to steer a steady, straight course in relations between Washington and Beijing, says Kurt Campbell, Assistant Secretary of Defense during most of the Clinton presidency.
Sino-U.S. relations has really not known stability during the last 8 years. It's been very hard to sort of modulate and moderate in the middle. It has tended to be either quite good or quite bad.
Just 3 years after the massacre in Tiananmen Square, Bill Clinton, as presidential candidate, slammed President George Bush for coddling the butchers of Beijing, in Clinton's words. And that made for trouble when Clinton entered the White House, says Kenneth Lieberthal, who recently left the National Security Council as director of Chinese affairs.
The Clinton administration itself began with a very tough line toward China and linked human rights and trade issues in its initial approach to China. So I think the two sides got off to a very tough start.
The president declared that he would grant China preferential trade status only if Beijing's behavior on human rights improved. He gave the Chinese a year, setting the deadline of spring 1994. It would be one of the first humiliations of President Clinton's foreign policy. He caved in that spring, and after that, emphasizing trade and economic issues would become the hallmark of his China policy. The reversal came about, says Stanford professor Michael Oxenberg, because of disarray within the administration on China policy.
There certainly was a lack of coherence in that the various departments each were pursuing what could be called their own China policy. The Defense Department, the U.S. Special Trade Representative, the State Department.
President Clinton did begin to impose discipline on his administration, but the damage would lead to deep suspicion in Beijing, verging on outright hostility. Things worsened in 1995, when President Clinton, under pressure from Republicans in Congress, permitted the president of Taiwan to visit the United States, and Beijing's leaders were enraged. It was the president's second big mistake on China, and it turned dangerous the next year, when China fired missiles near Taiwan during the island's presidential election campaign. In response, President Clinton decided to send two aircraft carrier battle groups to the area, and there was talk of war. Winston Lord was Assistant Secretary of State at the time.
In the spring of 96, we were at a low point in our relationship. I do think it's fair to say if one can admit some tactical mistakes in the first year or two of our policy, one can, without being immodest, say that we handled things from the spring of 96 onward in that year quite effectively.
It was almost as if leaders in both Washington and Beijing had to see how bad things could get between the two countries before they began to figure out how to make them better. Kenneth Lieberthal says they were potentially headed for disaster.
The Chinese understood in a way I think they had not fully believed before that under certain circumstances the United States would actually defend Taiwan or would commit military forces to the Taiwan Straits area. The United States, for its part, realized in a way I think more profound than they had before, and this was especially true for many on the Hill, that without more careful diplomacy, Americans could come back in body bags over the issue of Taiwan.
Improvements came rapidly after that. In the first 2 years of President Clinton's second term, there were two summit meetings with Chinese President Jiang Zemin. By then, President Clinton had become committed to a global policy of free trade in the belief that open markets encourage open political systems. The Chinese responded eagerly to the emphasis on trade, and in 1999, Prime Minister Zhu Rongji came to Washington and essentially caved in to all of the administration's demands on opening China's markets and entering the World Trade Organization. But then the president committed another error. Under intense pressure from the Congress for alleged Chinese campaign contributions, breaches in nuclear security, and Chinese espionage, President Clinton walked away from the trade deal. Susan Shirk was then Deputy Assistant Secretary of State.
The April visit of Zhu Rongji to the United States, when we came so close to concluding the WTO deal but didn't take those concessions and pocket them and conclude the deal, was undoubtedly the biggest foreign policy mistake of the Clinton administration.
On China, that is, and everyone in the administration immediately perceived it as a mistake. 2 months later, the mistake was compounded when several NATO bombs demolished China's embassy in Belgrade during the Kosovo conflict. Chinese leaders were convinced it was deliberate. Administration officials spent months trying to convince them it was accidental. U.S.-China relations hit the low point of the second Clinton term. Yet things turned around more quickly than anyone might have expected. Negotiations began again on trade, and eventually the president extracted the same concessions from China. Last spring, the House of Representatives recognized the progress and granted China permanent normal trade relations, a step President Clinton hailed after the vote.
Today, the House of Representatives has taken a historic step toward continued prosperity in America, reform in China, and peace in the world. If the Senate votes, as the House has just done, to extend permanent normal trade relations with China, it will open new doors of trade for America and new hope for change in China.
The Senate did just that several months later, marking a significant milepost in the U.S. relationship with China. There was also improvement on the non-proliferation front just a few months ago, when China committed itself to controls on its sales of missiles to Pakistan, Iran, and North Korea. But on this, former Assistant Secretary of Defense Kurt Campbell urges caution.
I think there is a more sophisticated understanding of the significant downsides associated with proliferation in China. But old habits die hard, and I still think the next administration that's about to come to power is going to have to struggle to deal with proliferation as the Clinton administration did as well.
Progress with China during the last year on trade, Taiwan, and non-proliferation sets the stage for a relatively smooth transition to the administration of George W. Bush. Former State Department official Susan Shirk says that Bush signaled that during the campaign with his silence.
I was impressed, frankly, and I say this as a lifelong Democrat, that the Bush team did not play politics with China policy during the campaign. And that's unusual.
In the end, President Clinton's policies on China probably came closest to resembling those of his predecessor, the elder George Bush. Nevertheless, Michael Oxenberg does not expect things to go any easier for George W. Bush.
There will inevitably be uncertainty and some argument within any administration on how to deal with China. One can anticipate that even with Secretaries Rumsfeld and Powell. They will have to go through, to some extent, a learning experience, as the Clinton administration did. But they are advantaged in one respect. We are 8 years down a process, and the process is slightly, I would say, on balance, encouraging.
Winston Lord also expects more bumps in the coming years because he says there is still no answer to the great central question about China. Will it become open, democratic, and cooperative, or will it emerge an authoritarian military power bent on domination?
I think we have to get used to these cycles. It's going to be difficult to keep a totally steady course. We've got to guard against both naive euphoria on the one hand and undue gloom when things go a little off track on the other hand. It's always going to be a relationship, if you excuse the expression, that's going to be sweet and sour.
That has been true for the past six presidents, including Bill Clinton, and there's no reason to think it will be any different for the next president. Mike Schuster, NPR News, Los Angeles.